VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on the VCY America Network. Ladies and gentlemen, our nation continues to reel from the COVID shot under the cloak of secrecy and nondisclosure. It is now 3 years after the rollout that information is coming out about previously hidden reports from the CDC concerning adverse effects from the shot that were known prior to or shortly after the rollout. And yet the shots continue to be pushed and mandated on various sectors. Further, just released today from the Epoch Times is reported that the CDC officials found evidence that the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna COVID-19 shots caused multiple deaths, before claiming that there was no evidence leaking the vaccines to any deaths. This is critical information that must be made public at a time when we're on the verge of surrendering our sovereignty as a nation to the World Health Organization, meeting with nations around the world 4 weeks from now in Geneva, Switzerland, to pass a pandemic treaty. Information on this and so much more coming on today's Crosstalk. Joining us, Barbara Lowe Fisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. They're a nonprofit charity that she co-founded with parents of DPT vaccine-injured children in 1982. NVIC is a national grassroots movement and public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms and informed consent protections in the public health system. She has researched, analyzed, and publicly articulated the major issues involving the science, the policy, law, ethics, and politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the subject. Barbara, welcome back to Crosstalk.
Oh, well, thank you, Jim. There's so much happening right now.
There is, and we got a lot to unfold regarding the COVID shot and the pandemic treaty and bird flu. But first, making the news, I'd like to have you talk about reports about Merck being sued for its HPV vaccine, Gardasil. I don't believe this is the first lawsuit that's come against them. So expose what is happening.
Right. There are about 200 lawsuits that are alleging that Gardasil caused serious injury that had been consolidated in the Western District of North Carolina, Charlotte Division Court. And what the allegation is that the Gardasil caused serious injury and chronic poor health, things like autoimmunity, encephalitis, neurological dysfunction, development of diabetes, premature ovarian failure, infertility, death. So these lawsuits, it's like a class action lawsuit, and they're talking about the fact that Merck didn't use a saline placebo in pre-licensure trials. They used a bioactive neurotoxic placebo, aluminum placebo. Aluminum is in the vaccine. They failed to adequately test the vaccine in the targeted age group, the young people who were targeted, 12, 13-year-olds, et cetera. Actually, kids as young as 9 years old were targeted. Anyway, that vaccine was fast-tracked to licensure. I remember back in 2006, my organization, the National Vaccine Information Center, put out a press release saying that this vaccine had not been proven safe to be given to all 11 to 12-year-old girls. That's who they targeted first. And we pointed out that they had used this aluminum-containing placebo, quote, in placebo. It really wasn't a placebo because it was bioactive, and it was aluminum was in the vaccine itself, so that, you know, there was no way they really had tested it for reactivity. At any rate, these lawsuits are talking about individuals who have been harmed by the vaccine and the fact that they didn't really know when they licensed the vaccine in 2006 and recommended it for all young girls, whether or not it would actually prevent development of cancer. So it's a big lawsuit. I don't know, you know, what the outcome is going to be,
right,
but certainly there's a new light being shined on the fact that Gardasil is a highly reactive vaccine And it wasn't really proven to be safe and effective before it was licensed.
Yeah, and what's interesting, when you're going through that list of some of the side effects and symptoms, you said it really fast, but I wanted people to hear the word. You said death. And I see Children's Health Defense also reporting an individual died of cervical cancer after receiving the Gardasil shot. There are lawsuits that are alleging death took place as a result, and yet we have school districts that are mandating this.
Right. The plaintiffs in this case are saying Merck exaggerated the benefits of Gardasil and they failed to properly disclose the adverse events, that they knowingly failed to warn both doctors and the public about the true risk of injury and death, and that they engaged in a, quote, relentless propaganda campaign with the intent to scare parents into giving their children the vaccine. Yep. Despite the lack of studies that showed that Gardasil prevents cancer. And if people remember back in the first decade of the 21st century, in 2006 and after, there was this incredible advertising campaign, which you still can see ads on TV, claiming that be one less cancer, cervical cancer victim or victim of HPV infection that can lead to cancer. They really didn't explain to people that most people who are sexually active have experience with HPV infection and naturally clear it from the body without any side effects, without any long-term consequences. There's a small minority of people who go on to have chronic HPV infection if it's not detected, like, for example, if girls don't get and women don't get pap smears, if that infection becomes chronic and goes on for a while, then you can develop a cancer. But they made it seem as if everybody who had an HPV infection was going to have cancer. And it's just not true.
Friends, we could discuss this issue on our full program of Crosstalk here today, but there is so much also we need to make you aware of. We're going to move on here to the COVID shot. And Barbara, you were one of those who provided testimony at Ron Johnson's session, What Are They Hiding? We aired during the course of 3 days here on Crosstalk. And I'm wondering, where does the information go from a session like this? I didn't see representatives there from the pharmaceuticals. It's like Senator Johnson is shouting from the rooftop and putting these together. No one's listening, including the media, the medical associations, the pharmaceutical companies, the politicians. Comment on this session that he had and your reaction to it.
Well, it was a remarkable gathering of physicians, scientists, lawmakers, journalists, consumer advocates like myself, who were brought together by Senator Johnson to talk about both the scientific and medical issues, but also about this incredible censorship campaign of which NBIC has certainly been a victim during the pandemic, where people who tried to speak out about the evidence that, for example, the SARS-CoV-2 virus is a synthetic virus that was made in a lab that clearly, there's ongoing hearings on this right now, got out of a lab in China and really caused the COVID pandemic. In other words, this is a man-made virus. And then the vaccine, if you want to call it a vaccine, I call it a cell disruptor biological, the mRNA COVID shots, which have market share all over the world, Pfizer and Moderna, that these vaccines were causing a lot of reactions. Right now, over 1.6 million adverse events have been filed in the Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. That is over like 60% of all adverse events ever reported to theirs since it became operational in 1990 under the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. So we have an extremely reactive vaccine. But my experience with that hearing was that it was a remarkable airing. Mm-hmm. By a lot of different types of people coming, yes, from different parts of the community, talking about all agreeing,
yes,
that not only was the truth being hidden about the reactivity of the COVID shots and the origin of this virus, but also the fact that when you did talk about it, you were punished.
Right.
You were censored. You were taken off the digital public square like NBIC.
Deplatformed, yeah.
Being taken off of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube in the space of 7 months in 2021. And then actually prevented from our donations being prevented from being processed through PayPal, because there were House of Representatives lawmakers in the House of Representatives who told the CEO of PayPal not to process our donations to NBIC. It's very serious, and a lot of people saying the same thing. I've been to a lot of hearings over 42 years.
Yeah.
I participated in and seen and been at a lot of hearings, and this was really unique. Now, you ask what happens, what is going to happen, because Senator Johnson can't actually get a bona fide congressional hearing. This had to be a informational event. Why? Because they won't allow hearings on this. The people like Johnson are facing oppression up on the Hill.
Yes. Yeah.
In the Senate and the House.
Well, he's exposing, and I guess those who have ears to hear will hear. So that's why we took 3 days on Crosstalk just to air testimony, and including yours and the Q&A that went back and forth there. It's important information. And, Barbara, I think it's important that we do expose what is happening. I mean, the Epoch Times is shedding light on the CDC has released previously hidden reports on adverse effects following the COVID-19 shots. I mean, we're talking heart inflammation, miscarriages, seizures, loss of consciousness, and even seizures immediately following the injection. The list goes on. So what's happening? What is being unfolded? What are we learning today that the pharmaceuticals did not tell us earlier?
Yeah, I have to really give credit to Epoch Times' incredible investigative work. There's a reporter, Matt Stieber, who has been following this for all during the pandemic, the reactivity associated with the COVID vaccine. And in April of this year, he had reported about information that was being released that had been filed with VSafe, which is a monitoring system that the CDC set up to specifically monitor COVID shot reactivity. So people could report there. It's a separate from the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System known as VAERS. So specifically for COVID shots. And through a Freedom of Information Act request by ICANN, they were able to get information that the CDC had refused to release about these reports to the VSafe system. And there were like 780,000 reports that had been received showing that into the VSafe system, showing that people were experiencing a wide range of post-vaccine problems, heart inflammation, miscarriages, seizures, loss of consciousness, Bell's palsy, a number of things. And yet they knew in 2021 and 2022, they knew these were coming in, but they did not disclose it to the public.
Barbara, and this is a good place for us to pause because we're up against a break, and we're going to further expose these reports. I mean, friends, here, we're talking about having the most transparent presidency and healthcare system, but when they had refused to make public these reports, the adverse events, over 780,000 reports. Friends, there's something awry here, and we're going to further expose it after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, now I've heard that sometimes germs evolve. Is this true?
Chris, this is a common claim that some germs acquire the ability to infect certain new species, or maybe they become resistant to drugs. But this is not evolution. In fact, it's really devolution, the loss of ability or the loss of genes to accomplish a certain purpose. A recent study showed that the whooping cough bacteria lost a certain suite of genes, which caused the animal host immune system not to recognize it. Now a new animal can be infected, but is this evolution? What happens here is the loss of genes, not the gain of genes as evolution needs. What results is death, not life. While it doesn't fit the evolution view, it does fit the creation followed by the fall and the curse view, and that's the Back to Genesis view.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Genesis. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today is Barbara Lo Fisher, the president of the National Vaccine Information Center. Folks, be ready to write down some websites. We'll be giving you some information today on the program. We're right now giving some revelation pertaining to the COVID shot that had been covered up and not released. And it took Freedom of Information Act requests to get the information out. And some 1.6 million adverse events reported. And where is the news media on this issue? We're also going to talk about how all of this is paving the way for what's happening just 4 weeks from now in Geneva, Switzerland. A meeting to come together to pass this pandemic treaty to surrender our sovereignty to place in the hands of the World Health Organization, the authority and power to make our health decisions here in the United States of America, and to force upon the population whatever dictates that they choose are necessary according to their whatever their scheme of events is. Right now, we're talking with Barbara Lo Fisher. And Barbara, as we're talking about the Epoch Times today is reporting that the CDC officials, they found evidence that the Pfizer-BioNTech and the Moderna COVID-19 shots caused multiple deaths before claiming that there was no evidence linking these vaccines to any deaths.
Right. And just like the V-safe data that goes back to 2021, that they did not make, the CDC did not make public, these reports of deaths after myocarditis, which is an adverse effect that has been acknowledged by CDC as causally associated with the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA vaccines, these deaths go back to 2021. Remember, the mRNA vaccines, which have market share in this country and many other countries, were licensed in December of 2020, and they were licensed, they were approved by the FDA under an emergency use authorization called an EUA. The first time that this government has ever recommended universal use of a biological product, vaccine, they call it a vaccine, without having fully licensed it, but this time under an emergency use authorization. So by end of 2021, the CDC knew that this vaccine was highly reactive, and it was causing inflammation of the heart particularly, and people were dying after the inflammation of the heart. And yet they did not, clearly, just like, and I can say, having done this work for 4 decades, they are refused to acknowledge the risks associated with vaccines, not just this vaccine, but all of the vaccines. And I'm not saying all the vaccines are as reactive as this one, but what I'm saying is the pattern is that there is denial and cover-up of the reactivity of vaccines because the government licenses, recommends, and promotes mandatory use of vaccines. And they do not want to acknowledge that there are significant risks. They don't want to do the studies and have not done the studies to find out who is genetically and epigenetically and biologically and environmentally at higher risk for having an adverse response to a vaccination. So people are thrown under the bus, and they're covered up. The deaths and the injuries are covered up. This is the biggest scandal in the history of medicine, in my opinion, is this cover-up and minimizing of vaccine risk. And so, you know, the fact that we now know that this is a highly reactive vaccine, that the government has not acknowledged the breadth and depth of this problem, it's even more reason for people to get informed, to become educated about this issue, so that when they go into a doctor and the doctor says, you need to get these 5 vaccines today or whatever, they have done their own research. And they have understood whether or not they may be a high-risk person. Mm-hmm. There's some information out there. I mean, if you have got a coinciding viral or bacterial infection, if you got a history of autoimmunity or severe allergies, if you have a history of previous vaccine reactions, or your child, you need to be very careful.
You know,
but an informed consumer is one who can protect their own health.
And you're mentioning key words, informed consumer. And if this shot was the next best thing to slice bread, why is it that it took a Freedom of Information Act request and sometimes it's lawsuits and everything to drag this information out? And this article today is even reporting that CDC officials told them in a letter dated June 13th, 2023, said there was no deaths reported to the VAERS for which the agency determined the available evidence indicated Moderna or Pfizer vaccination caused or contributed to the deaths.
Right. This is, the way you can say it's a lie. I mean, it's terrible to have to understand that individuals who are supposed to be protecting the public health, who are employed by government to protect the public health, are so afraid of acknowledging that a product that they recommend, and it's not just recommend, but have pushed, have mandated. I mean, we know with the COVID shots that it was the federal government that tried to get all the corporations in the country that had 100 or more employees to mandate this product to be used as a condition of employment.
Yes, yes.
And we thank goodness we at NVAC, we've been in the state since 2010, educating state legislatures about the right to informed consent, to protect informed consent rights. No state legislature mandated the COVID vaccine. But there were corporations that did. There were healthcare workers who were mandated to get this shot. And this shot that can cause heart inflammation and death that has been covered up by the CDC. So it's a very serious situation. But I think it's important to understand it's not just about COVID shots.
Right, right, right. It's about all. And informed consent is so critical in all of this. Barbara, as we're making our way to this pandemic treaty, let's talk about the bird flu. the fact is that it's being reported that the U.S. is now stockpiling bird flu vaccines. Why is that happening? Are humans at risk for this, or are we being prepared for something that's going to put another scare through the population?
Well, I think we all need to go back and remember early 2020. When they started talking about, there's this unusual coronavirus, there's outbreaks in China, and, they might come here. You know, people fly here from China, and it might come here, and it could be really bad. And then we all know what happened. All of a sudden, without any warning, we were in lockdowns. We were told we had to wear masks. We were told we couldn't get within 6 feet of somebody. We were told to shelter in place. That we were all going to infect each other and all die. And I put out a commentary last week that talked about bird flu outbreaks and the WHO IHR pandemic treaty push. The reason I was talking about these bird flu, which when I went to the CDC's website, by the way, here is the description of bird flu in humans. The reported signs and symptoms of bird flu virus infections in humans have ranged from no symptoms or mild illness, such as conjunctivitis, eye redness, or mild flu-like upper respiratory symptoms to severe, such as pneumonia requiring hospitalization, including fever over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, muscle or body aches, headaches, fatigue, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, maybe diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, seizures. In other words, influenza symptoms or symptoms of COVID. These are respiratory symptoms. But when you look at the headlines that are being put out, it's hysterical headlines like, I think the United Nations put out a press release said that, quote, the ongoing global spread of bird flu infections to mammals, including humans, is a significant public health concern. And that it could have extremely high mortality associated with this H5N1 bird flu. So you can see the Reuters and others starting to talk about the fact that H5N1 influenza has been detected in poultry. That is, they're talking about eggs potentially being a problem. They might have H5N1 virus in them. They're talking about cattle now having H5N1 bird flu infections here in the United States. And the fact that dairy workers, like in Texas, have been showing signs of H5N1 influenza. So you can see the start of a fear campaign that we're looking at potentially an H5N1 bird flu pandemic among humans. While this is going on, what are we also seeing? We're seeing this huge push by the United Nations World Health Organization mm-hmm. for nations to sign a pandemic treaty and amendments to WHO international health regulations, which would be laws that would be in treaty form, which means they would be legally binding on the United States and any other country that signed it, these treaties, that whenever the World Health Organization in the future declares a pandemic emergency, like they did with COVID, like potentially they could do with bird flu, then everybody has to salute the World Health Organization smartly. Whatever they say we should do with our bodies and the bodies of our children, we would have to do. It would override U.S. sovereignty. And the thing that's worrisome is state sovereignty.
Yes.
As I said, I've said in other interviews we've done, we have a decentralized form of government in the United States because we're a constitutional republic. So how do we stop the COVID mandates in this country? We stopped it at the state level because vaccine laws in this country, public health laws, are mostly decided by the states. Like in Europe, with countries that don't have a state system like we do, when the federal government there declares that you have to carry a vaccine passport or you can't go anywhere without proving vaccination, they have no other option. In this country, we have state laws, and that's where we are active, NDIC. And so what we have been trying to warn people is you've got to contact your state and federal legislators and tell them you don't want the U.S. to sign this WHO pandemic treaty. You don't want that international health regulations at the WHO to tell us what we're going to do here in this country.
Mm-hmm. And a matter of fact, we saw come out from LifeSiteNews.com just recently about Utah and Florida passing laws that are intended to prevent the World Health Organization from overriding the state's authority on matters of public health. Louisiana, Oklahoma have legislation set to take effect soon, pending final votes. And Barbara, you're also engaged in providing information about what's going on in the state of Alabama as well.
Right. The portal that we have is called the NVIC Advocacy Portal at nvicadvocacy.org. We help people in the states. When you sign up, it's free. You become a user of the portal, and you can find out what is happening in your state with regard to vaccine-related legislation. And so that's why we put out this alert, and we told everybody to contact their senators and their state senators and their reps, as well as federal and also their state attorney general, which you can get all that information on the NVIC Advocacy Portal. And another action item.
We're up against a break right now. So, friends, we'll come back to that other action item, nvicadvocacy.org. Mark that website down. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Muslims continually claim that Islam is a loving and peaceful religion. They also insist that violence is committed by only a few radicals who misunderstand the teaching of Muhammad, which are found in the Quran and in the Hadith. But is this true? The Violent Truth About Islam is a 24-page booklet that examines such claims, along with dozens of passages from the Quran and statements from the Hadith and Muslim scholars. What is the cause of violence and terror in Islam? This booklet will leave no doubt about Islam's long history of intolerance and bloodshed arising from the very words in the Quran and from the example of Muhammad's life and teachings. One copy of this booklet is available for a donation of $2, 5 copies for $9, or 10 copies for a donation of $12. Call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher is with us today, and she is the executive director, the president of the National Vaccine Information Center. Their website is nvic.org, but the advocacy portal that will keep you abreast of what's happening within your state legislation, as well as what's happening federally, is nvicadvocacy.org. And Barbara, you were just telling us about the action on a state level and states that are taking stands on protecting their state from the pandemic treaty if it would pass. But I wonder if this wouldn't be a showdown to the U.S. Supreme Court, like we've seen some other things. I mean, whether it be things like, Roe v. Wade from before or the Obergefell and some of these other decisions. As far as how far that state sovereignty is going to go. But this is a critical aspect for individuals to be informed and take action.
Well, I'm very concerned about the fact that on April 16th, the White House announced a 5-year, quote, strategy to strengthen global health security plan. Mm. It looks like they're doing. They've made an agreement, financial investment partnerships with 50 to 100 countries, to basically do what the WHO treaties would do. Clearly, they're trying to cover themselves. If somehow the treaties fail to get enough signatures, then they will come around with the U.S. being in the driver's seat and do what the pandemic treaties potentially fail to do if they don't get the signatures.
By whose authority?
Very dangerous.
By whose authority, Barbara?
The current administration's authority.
My. No House,
no
Senate.
One of the things we're trying to get done is that the Senate should be approving these treaties.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks as if the administration wants to go around that process, and by making separate bilateral financial investment partnerships with 50 to 100 countries, they would be able to drive the goals and achieve the goals anyway.
Yeah, they've learned how not to use the word treaty. We call it a deal. We call it an accord. We call it an agreement. It really, bottom line, is a treaty that, as you said, should go through the Senate, that would require that supermajority vote to have it passed as a treaty. John Kerry told us we can't, the Iran nuclear deal, we have to call it a deal because it's not a treaty. We wouldn't get the votes for it. And the same is true with this pandemic treaty here as well.
Right. And this strategy to strengthen global health security, this plan that the administration has come up with, it is to ensure a rapid response to global health emergencies, and they want to transform international financial institutions such as the World Bank to accelerate, quote, the manufacture, procurement, and delivery of medical countermeasures like vaccines. So all of this response for the pandemic public health response is very centered on the mass global use of biological products they're labeling vaccines, because, as I said, the mRNA product, and they do want to use the mRNA technology for these new pandemic vaccines. Hmm. I don't care what the pandemic or the pathogen is. So, everybody needs to understand that we've got a lot at stake here. And we were talking before the break about what's going on in Alabama. One of the things that the public health infrastructure has been trying to push is minor consent. That is the idea that children can give their own consent to the use of vaccines or products labeled as vaccines without their parents' knowledge or consent. And one of the ways that they've got, we call them minor consent bills. And one of the ways that they're getting into this through the back door is saying, well, sexually transmitted diseases like hepatitis B and HPV, these children whose parents, think that they're not going to have sex, these children need to be able to say yes to these sexually transmitted disease vaccines. But what they really want is for all vaccines, mm-hmm. that are recommended by the federal government and mandated by the states to come under that umbrella. And in D.C., D.C. did pass a minor consent bill for children as young as 11 years old to be able, doctors to be able to convince them to get vaccinated without telling their parents.
And Barbara, just for clarification, you're talking about the city of Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Washington, D.C. But it was challenged legally, and what's really interesting is that law, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 86, which I worked on with a number of parents and Congress, in that law, we got safety provisions. And one of the safety provisions was that parents would have to be given a vaccine information statement prior to a child, a minor child, being vaccinated, which means the parent would know and give consent. Well, we used that. That was used in that lawsuit challenging that D.C. Bill or that law, and the law is null and void now. But that doesn't mean that they're not continuing. There's a number of bills pending in states for minor consent. And some of them, like I say, are coming in the back door with sexually transmitted disease language. But in Alabama, there's a bill, HB 165, that prohibits an unemancipated minor from consenting to vaccination without the written consent of the parent or legal guardian. And we need to have people contact, in Alabama, contact their representatives, their House of Representatives, on Bill 8, Alabama 8, House Bill 165. And it was approved in the House, and we need them to contact the state senator and ask them to support that bill so that it can become law.
Okay, and friends, again, that's for those of you listening in Alabama, that is Alabama House Bill 165. That one's not impacting the rest of the country, though. What happens, Barbara, one state sees what another state is doing, and you know, copying that legislation is also possible.
That's right. Just like that Louisiana bill on the stopping the WHO, we need to have the same type of bill, like the language that was used by the Louisiana Senate that voted to say that the state of Louisiana would not obey the World Health Organization, just like this minor consent bill in Alabama. We need language to be duplicated in the rest of the states. And like I say, we follow right now, NBIC is following over 700 bills on our advocacy portal. We look at all the vaccine-related bills, and people can go on and see what's happening in their state and see what the status of the bill is, where it is. And then we have position statements on there, and they can then contact their legislators and tell them that they either want to oppose or support the bill.
Friends, keep in mind, again, this WHO pandemic agreement is going to be coming up for a vote at the end of this month. They're meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, and goes into the first couple days of early June. But this would give, would cede control to the World Health Organization. If they dictate vaccination passports are necessary to travel from place to place, that will fall upon every country, every participating country in this, of which it seems that the United States is just, you know, at the starting gate waiting to get their signature on the paper here. In addition to this, if they determine, that we need to have mass scale closures or target this, friends, this they will dictate what happens in rural town America through the dictates that come through the World Health Organization. And the danger of this, Barbara, again, is, and we've heard them, they're already preparing a vaccination for the next pandemic. They don't even know what it is, but they're saying we're preparing a vaccination, which is for this pandemic, which they've already forecast is going to be 20 times deadlier than the COVID-19.
And they will use this mRNA technology that is, I call it a cell disruptor biological product. It's not like a traditional vaccine, and they are able to produce these mRNA vaccines within 100 days, which means that when a pandemic public health emergency is declared, like they declared with COVID in 2020, you're going to see a vaccine with lightning speed be approved and disseminated.
Wow.
And mandated. And the fact that you need to have a vaccine passport, because that's the WHO's position.
Yeah.
They've worked with the European Union on that, on a digital health pass. And that was in effect over in Europe in a number of countries. We did not have that here. But if we sign a treaty that supersedes state sovereignty of the United States and these state laws. Now, what do I think will happen? You know, this, you know, to quote just a little bit from that Louisiana, the Senate bill that's already passed, it says, quote, the World Health Organization, United Nations, and World Economic Forum shall have no jurisdiction or power within the state of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
No rule, regulation, fee, tax, policy, or mandate of any kind of the World Health Organization, United Nations, or World Economic Forum shall be enforced or implemented by the state of Louisiana. I mean, this is the kind of strong language that we need in every single state.
Yes, yes. Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher is with us from the National Vaccine Information Center. Our phone number today is 1-800-733-9829. Taking your questions or brief comments, 1-800-733-9829. To stay abreast of what's happening within this realm, this world of vaccinations, NVIC.org, National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. To stay abreast of what's happening legislatively in your individual states. And Barbara, I understand that people can sign up and they will actually get alerts if something's going on in their state.
Yes, we're trying to beef up our alert system. Again, remember, it's 700 bills.
Yes.
The number of bills that are being introduced that are vaccine-related has just exploded in the last 3 to 4 years. It used to be that we would maybe follow 200 bills, 100 bills, and it's just gotten crazy. So you have a lot of lobbyists from pharma and public health and medical trade who are in these legislatures trying to pass bills that will make it absolutely impossible for people to say no. And that's what we're fighting against, is we believe in autonomy and the right to protect bodily integrity, the right to exercise informed consent to medical risk-taking. And so if you believe in that, if you should get involved and try to do something in your own state, and we can help you do that.
Friends, again, NVICAdvocacy.org and NVIC.org. Our phone lines are packed. Let's begin with David in Hillsborough. You're on the air. Hillsborough, Illinois.
Yeah, hi, Barbara. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic and then the vaccinations, people were talking about all kinds of things that could be in the vaccinations, like lipid nanoparticles, things that could get into the brain where they could control you externally. So we're just wondering, what about all these protests that are erupting all over university campuses across the United States, excuse me, involving young people who are probably all vaccinated?
Yeah. It's an interesting question that back when I was working with Dr. Harris Coulter on DPT, a shot in the dark in the early 80s, what we found with just one vaccine, pertussis vaccine, the wholesale pertussis vaccine, was the ability, the toxins in the vaccine, ability to cause brain inflammation. When you have brain inflammation, you have changes. You can have changes in the brain.
Hmm.
And the changes can cause neurological dysfunction that ranges from ADHD, ADD, to learning disabilities, autism spectrum disorder, mental retardation, all the way to death. So in other words, vaccine injuries on a spectrum.
Tell you what, we got a break. We'll be back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. There's new video footage now of the 5 red heifers that were shipped from Texas to Israel. One has been disqualified due to dark hair. The other 4 are in the running. Why do we have to have these? Well, This is what is discussed in Numbers for a purification process, the slaughter of the red heifer, the ashes mixed with water, and the purification for other processes to begin for the new temple, the third temple, the tribulation temple. Now, we're not excited about that because Christ was our once and final sacrifice for sins for those who place their trust in Christ. But the fact that the Jews are so excited about these red heifers, that they have them, they're ready to get going with the temple, the cutting of the stones for the temple. And yes, guess what now? We have video footage also of Levites in their Levitical robes, a choir of Levites singing that will be used in the temple. The stage is being set, my friends, for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher with us today from the National Vaccine Information Center. So, Barbara, I believe David here from Illinois was asking, you know, can the shot, if people have had this shot, and a lot of young people had, many colleges, universities required them, is this something that they can be passing certain things on to other players out there?
Well, I think what he was trying to say is behavior that we're seeing on college campuses affected by the fact they got the COVID shot. I would argue that, you know, we're now giving children 72 doses of 17 vaccines, including the COVID vaccine, mm-hmm. between day of birth and age 18. So there have been several generations of multiple vaccines being given in the developmental period. I know that you know, when you have a neurological reaction to a vaccine, sometimes you don't even know you've had it. That can result in minimal brain dysfunction, ADD, ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, et cetera. We don't know to the extent that we're seeing more violence in children. We're seeing behavioral disorders, increase in learning disabilities, and all of these things that have led to the chronic disease and disability mm-hmm. epidemic among children. We don't know to the extent that mass vaccination, use of multiple vaccines in early childhood has contributed to this incredible behavior change that we're seeing among children and illness that we're seeing among children. That's kind of what I wanted to say about that.
Let's get to Patty in Phoenix, Arizona. Patty, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Patty. Yes, Barbara, I have an article here from the New American, a quote from Dr. Michael Yaden. At the time he was he was vice president of Pfizer. Mm-hmm. He said, he made a quote to the LifeSiteNews.com.
Okay, just go right to the quote. We're short on time.
Okay. He said that the vaccines were designed to injure, maim, and kill. Multiple obvious toxicities were deliberately built into their design.
Okay, Barbara, can you comment on that?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the fact not only is this a synthetic virus, this is a man-made virus, SARS-CoV-2. It came out of a lab, but that these mRNA products either that they don't really understand the full range of biological effects on the body, or that somehow there were plans to do harm. I think we're going to have to see the evidence. Just like we're starting to see the evidence that this was a man-made virus,
yeah.
We're going to have to see the evidence presented that there was deliberate harm intended.
Thank you for sharing that. Dee is next in Iowa. Dee, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling in to comment about how far back a lot of this goes. I had the swine flu vaccine, and it destroyed my whole immune system. Hmm. I've been suffering for over 47 years.
My.
Yeah.
That's how long
that swine flu vaccine in 1976. Actually generated the precedent for government to indemnify the vaccine manufacturers. That was during the Ford administration, and the companies blackmailed. They said, we won't produce a vaccine unless you give us full liability protection.
Mm-hmm.
And about 7 years later, of course, they went back for all the childhood vaccines in the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. But I hear this all the time that you know, if you go back to the smallpox vaccine, you go back to the polio vaccine. There have been injury. There's been injury and death associated with vaccination since the first vaccines for smallpox. The government has never wanted to acknowledge just how reactive vaccines are.
Thank you for the call here, Dee. We have Christine next. Hi, Christine. You're on the air. Hillsborough, Wisconsin.
It's known that in the livestock industry that mRNA technology is involved in vaccines, and this is being downplayed. My question is your organization or do you know of a group who is following any of this information on livestock use of mRNA and the potential effects on our food supply?
Thank you.
You know, people are starting to get aware of the fact that the food supply is potentially going to be contaminated by the mRNA products that are being used in animals. I believe there is a bill pending in one of the states, and I'm sorry, I can't recall it right now, that would prohibit, label the products that have potential mRNA contamination. So there is a wider awareness that our food supply is being potentially contaminated by not just the mRNA products, but a number of other things as well. And so I think the labeling is going to become more important as more people become aware. The thing I am concerned about, though, is the acceleration of these legal efforts, like with the WHO pandemic treaty, to try to basically put people in handcuffs. You know, that these are very powerful industries. Yep. It includes the financial, the industry, the World Banks. It includes big tech companies.
If you get start exposing this, you get deplatformed. Let me just also mention, we're going to squeeze one last call in, that you also reach out to Tom DeWeese at the American Policy Center. I know he's been delving into some of the things pertaining to our food supply and beef and so forth, and AmericanPolicy.org. Thanks for the call. We're going to go to Douglas in Phoenix. Douglas, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to be clear on that Gardasil 9 thing. Not only is it encouraging sexuality among young teens and sexuality without consequence, but it's also completely ineffective against a problem that is about as common as rape dying from a broken arm.
Okay, I'm going to have Barbara comment on that. And Barbara, we have 45 seconds. Go ahead.
Yes, the Gardasil vaccine has a long history, history. You can go to NBIC.org. We have information on all the diseases and the vaccines on our disease and vaccine pages, and you can read about Gardasil in there.
Yeah, and to get more information, and Barbara, as people, you know, have their children at school, they're getting these notes home from the school saying, oh, these are mandatory vaccines, you know, for your child to come back to class. They really need to become educated before they just put their name on the dotted line.
Right. We have state laws on NBIC.org, and you can see what the laws are in your state and what the exemptions are allowed.
NVIC.org, NVICAdvocacy.org. Again, folks, reach out to your members or your state legislatures regarding the WHO pandemic treaty and protecting your states, and reach out to your member of Congress at 202-224-3121. Barbara, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Jim.
And stay on the line for just a moment, if you would. Friends, critical information coming your way here as we've talked about the COVID shot and also the pandemic treaty. So much at stake, and it strikes right at the heart of our United States Constitution and our sovereignty. Friends, let's keep the matters also in prayer. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.